Hello, I'm James George and welcome to Life in Football, the podcast that interviews top professionals working in different fields within our beautiful game.
This week I'm joined by former Sheffield Wednesday, Northampton, Stevenage, Port Vale and Bristol Rovers legend Chris Lines. Hi Chris, thanks for joining us today. How are you today?
Yep, all good mate, all good. Start of a new week, so we'll see what this one brings.
So we'll go into what you're up to at the moment in a moment, but let's go back to the beginning of your football career. Talk to us about how you, you know, became a professional football player and talk us through your career.
Yeah, I've told this story many a time, but it's kind of, yeah, it's not the usual kind of way of, you know, young lads breaking in to play football. I was at Bristol Rovers from a kid up until 15, then got released, like when they offer like YTS and stuff like that. So yeah, for me at that point, that was like disaster. But luckily for me, we had like a kind of a college, which was local, and they had like a football academy. So as soon as I got released, obviously I was kind of thinking, what do I do next? So yeah, college was what I decided to do, and they had like an up and coming football academy. It was a bit sort of, you know, not jumpers for goalposts, but it was a bit like that at the start. You know, we had kind of one pitch, which was off site. A lot of it was putting the equipment together, and yeah, we played games on a Wednesday in the college league, and then on the Saturday, I think it was, in like the Southwest Counties League, and obviously done all my college work alongside that. So it, yeah, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And in the end, that was my link back into professional football, because Bristol Rovers actually built up a kind of a link with the college, and sort of like the best lads who were at the college often maybe went on the bench in the reserve games, or, you know, if they were a couple short, we'd go and play reserve football. And it actually turned out probably five or six of our lads were actually better players than what Rovers had on their books already at YTS level. So that was kind of my in back into it. And, you know, I did my 2 years at college, didn't do any YTS program. And then I think probably 18 or 19 started sort of traveling with the first team then, still at college, to be fair. And just being sort of like 17th, 18th man, didn't get a game, didn't really get a kick with the manager that was there at the time. And he then got sacked and a new manager came in who was actually a player at the time. So he sort of stepped up from being a player to being a manager, brought in a director of football, and they signed me on my first professional deal then. I think I was probably 19 or 20, so it was quite a late one, but that was how I got in. And from that moment,
did you always believe you were going to become a professional football player, or were you thinking about another career at the time?
I think I always knew I had the ability to do it, and it sort of was just, and I've learned this throughout my whole career now, like it sometimes if your face doesn't fit, and if, you know, certain attributes back then when you were a kid, quite often they pick the biggest kids and the strongest kids. And I was just more sort of like a technical player, and obviously like the defensive side of my game just wasn't there at that point. But I still had, you know, when I was playing college football, you know, I travel around the world playing different games for like England colleges, England schoolboys, and I still knew I had the ability, do you know what I mean? Because I was week in, week out playing well. So it was just, I needed that kind of way to get back into it. So it wasn't, at the start, I thought, wow, give up now. But I suppose after a while, you start trusting yourself. And, you know, even when you sign that first deal, you haven't made it. And it was
when
just
you did sign that
harder.
First deal, how long did it take for you to actually get in the first team and actually cement your place in the first team?
Took a while. There was a couple of us sort of breaking through, and we used to, like, you know, be sometimes 17th, 18th man, or if we were lucky, we might get that last spot on the bench, and then we'd be thinking, are we going to get on soon and stuff like that? But it was probably, it must have been, you know, 9 months to a year before I actually got on the pitch. So that was just another sort of just waiting game, playing reserve games, doing well in training, working on the aspects of my game that kind of I needed to work on. And eventually I got that kind of sort of game time on the pitch. And once I did that, I knew that's where I had to stay. So it was down to me then, really.
You obviously ended up having a decent career, played for a few different clubs. What was it? 356 appearances for Bristol Rovers. You played for clubs like Port Vale, Stevenage, Sheffield Wednesday, Northampton. So you had a really good long career in the end. What was your highlights?
I probably can't pinpoint it. I get asked this a lot, and I've been really lucky to get five promotions, three with Rovers, one with Sheffield Wednesday and one with Northampton. So they're all kind of highlights, you know. Some players go through their career and don't get to experience that. I mean, I've done three of those at Wembley as well. So it's, I think probably walking up those steps at Wembley, something you dream of as a kid, scoring a penalty in the shootout at Wembley, something else you kind of dream of as a kid. And just walking up those Wembley steps, you know, 40,000 Rovers fans there, which is the team I obviously grew up supporting. That has got to be, you know, that is every kid's dream. And for me to be able to do that, you know, twice with Rovers at Wembley, it's, you know, you've got to pinch yourself sometimes. But at the same time, you know, we got promoted last game of the season at Hillsborough. For Wednesday, you know, 40,000 people there. Last day, had to win. We win, and we get promoted at, you know, such a historic club, which you don't quite realise the size of it until you sort of go there. And to do that in my first season was obviously a massive highlight as well. So,
when would you say you played your best football? When were you at your peak?
Probably that. My first season at Sheffield Wednesday, I reckon. And the kind of the seasons leading up to that, which obviously got me the move there. I was playing centre mid for Rovers as a two, and I think I scored 12 or 13 goals that season. And then the next season, we had a terrible season, and it was tough, but I think I carried on still playing well, and obviously that attracted the attention of Sheffield Wednesday. And then when I went there, to be fair, first five games I was awful. I couldn't get used to playing in front of a decent crowd. And obviously I'm at Hillsborough now, you know.
Did it make a difference? Did you think when you look back now, you think that made a difference to you, playing in front of a big crowd, bigger club, and it actually did make a difference?
Yeah, it took me 5-10 games to just settle in and just realise, you know, the atmosphere down at Rovers is great. But I'd been there sort of 6-7 years then, and it was kind of autopilot going out there. And when I went to Hillsborough, I think first game, there was like 23,000-24,000. And, you know, it's like little old me. He's just come up from Bristol Rovers. No one really knows who I am. The pressure's on me massively. They had a bit of a bad season the one before, so the, you know, Sheffield Wednesday in League One, they shouldn't have been there. So it was straight away into a pressure cooker, and I think, yeah, like I said, I think first my debut, I gave away a pen, handball, and it just started like just not well, and obviously, eventually, got used to it. We started winning, and I think after maybe 7-8 games, it was just enjoyment and going out there, and I flicked that switch from being nervous to actually just embracing that, you know, big crowd, good players around me, and we just, yeah, we were unbeatable really for the rest of that season. I think we only lost a couple of games, and obviously to do it last home game of the season, sold out, it was, yeah, I'll never forget that.
Now, the reason I wanted to get you on the podcast was obviously you had a very interesting career, but the main reason is I keep seeing your name popping up on footballers' Instagrams, thanking you for helping them with their insurance. And so straight away, I was like, I'd like to chat to Chris about this. And I thought, well, rather than just calling him up and finding out a bit more, why not just get him on the podcast and actually find out more? Because I think this would be really interesting for, you know, current football players, but also anyone full stop. So let's talk about your transition from being a professional football player into more of a semi-professional football player, first of all, and then that can obviously lead on to how you got into your new career. So at what point did you realise that maybe being a professional football player might not be, you know, it might be towards the end of your career and you might have to start going semi-pro? And then how did that then start working into you starting your new career?
Yeah, I think for me, it was, you know, a lot of lads get to that age or that point and they think, oh, I can't quite keep up with this anymore and I can't train every day and I'm getting little injuries here and there. Like, that was not the case for me at all. I could have easily stayed and been full time. I could probably still do it now, to be fair. So it was just the traveling for me. It was, you know, I was always lucky to be in and around Bristol at the start of my career. But the minute, you know, I got to sort of 35, 36 and I was at Northampton and then Stevenage, and I was in Stevenage, which had its bonus points because I was near my little one who lives up that way. But I was staying in a hotel, and obviously on my days off, I'll be traveling back to Bristol to see the missus and the rest of my family, and probably, you know, 3-4 times a week, just going up and down the motorway, sort of, you know, getting up crack of dawn, 2.5 hour drive up to training. That was just taking its toll on me, you know. And like I say, if I was somewhere more local, I probably would have carried on doing it. But just in the end, it was that, along with other things. I think football's changed a lot from what it was when I was younger. You know, you used to get into training, train, and you're done. Whereas now it's, you know, you're in, you're doing meetings, you're doing videos, you're doing, there's so much else going on. And then you finish training, it's like, right, we'll have some more, we're going to do a bit more analysis. And for me, it was like, it's getting a bit too much, that, like, I just want to come in, I want to train, and then that's me done. Do you know what I mean? Which is what it used to be like. But I suppose it was just a case of just, you know, summing up for me as a person, being like a big family man and spending time away. And also the financial side of it, you know, training every day or training twice a week for almost similar money as well. And I think that's the case in a lot of you know, you've got some big clubs now who are sort of National League, even that National League South, there's, you know, there are teams in our league that train full time, but there are a lot of teams that train, you know, twice a week. And financially, it kind of doesn't add up to be maybe training every day in League Two.
There's a lot of players who could play League One, League Two football in the National South, and they deliberately do it because they're thinking about their long-term future, and they'll have a career or a business, and they're like, well, I can get paid, I don't know, as an example, £700 a week, training twice a week, playing on a Saturday, and then I can have a job or a business or whatever it is, and I could be earning, you know, the same, if not more money doing that. And when I retire, I've then got a career. Whereas if you just keep playing professional till you finish, you haven't got that career necessarily lined up, and then you're stuck. Let's face it, you need to have something. If you're in League One, League Two money, you need to. You can't just retire like a Premier League football player. You've got to go on and do something.
Exactly that, yeah. And I think, like, I've had a lot of conversations with people since I've dropped down to this level, and, you know, all the lads are working. A lot of the lads at Bath, you know, they work full-time jobs, and then they're going training, they're getting paid decent money to be, you know, playing part-time. And like you say, you add them two together, you'd struggle to find, you know, that sort of money in League Two especially, and probably not even in League One if you know, like you say, if you've got a successful business, or, you know, you're self-employed and you're earning good money weekly doing your job, and then you add your part-time football money on top of that as well, it soon adds up. And like you say, you've already got a base in then for after football, which I think that's kind of more of like a modern day footballer's thinking now. You know, we never used to really think like that back in the day. It was, you know, you're a footballer, you're all the kind of investments and stuff like that weren't about as much back then. Do you know what I mean?
Years ago, it was you opened a pub or you went into coaching. Yeah. That was generally it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was sort of kind of the thinking behind it for me. And then.
So did you get offered an opportunity to join Bath? Is that how it started?
Yeah.
Or did you get, obviously, did the business opportunity come first, you know, or, you know, work in insurance, or did the Bath opportunity come first? How did it all come about?
No, I kind of sorted out the football thing first, I think. And obviously, you know, dropping down and had to make sure that the kind of finances were right for that. And then obviously, but for me, it was like, well, I'm probably at the time when it was like the fuel crisis and that I was spending so much on petrol. I could have probably just we train 5 minutes from my house now. So it's, you know, I could probably jog down there. So I was saving a fortune on that. And it was just being able to just, yeah, spend more time with the family and be back in Bristol and, you know, where all my friends and my family are. And at that point, I didn't actually have a concrete plan of what I was going to do as well. So it was, you know, I had ideas in my head and then I had other ideas and it was one day I'd be leaning towards this and then I'd lean towards that. So I had ideas, but just out of the blue, really, my boss, Matt Collins, who owns Umbrella Financial, who I work for, just dropped me a message out of nowhere. And he'd obviously seen and found it online that I'd dropped down to part-time and just sort of left me a voice note saying, like, I might have something for you here. And for me, it was like a lot of the things I was thinking of doing were obviously kind of football-based, whereas this is just a completely different kind of setting for me. It's something I don't know anything about. And to me, that sort of interested me a little bit more than kind of doing something completely just carrying on doing football stuff, you know. So I took him up on the call. And yeah, I mean, since then, it was hard work at the start, obviously, like trying to pick it all up. And but the good thing for me was, like you say, and you mentioned, you see a lot of my stuff out there now, that I could focus a lot my client base being footballers and ex-teammates and current teammates and stuff like that. So as soon as I started doing it, it just took off. And, you know, I had that client base of people right in front of me of all the old teams I played for, all my old colleagues, all, you know, just people I've met through football. And I'm glad you say that you see it all popping up, because that's kind of like,
I keep seeing it and I keep thinking, what is it you actually, you know, I have an idea of what you would do, insurance, football. I'm guessing it's something on the lines of, if they get injured, there's better insurance out there, because generally what happens is if you get injured, especially for like a non-league club, is you can often just be stuck. And there aren't the regulations, basically, you're not going to be on the money that you were on, is what I understand. So do you want to just talk us through how you could, you know, a good example is, say, for example, a player at Bath or a professional player, or talk us through your clients and how you would actually help them.
Yeah. So the good thing is my clients are actually basing from, I've got professional lads on my books and then I've got non-league lads like Bath lads. Then I've got just my mates who play Sunday league, you know, for the local pub team and work all week. So I think that's the main thing about it in terms of, yeah, you hit the nail on the head, really. A lot of players in the non-league, especially, obviously, if you get injured, I know they were thinking about bringing in the whole thing where they kind of stopped their wages after a certain point, weren't they, at one point? But prime example, yeah, I mean, someone at Bath got injured, say, for example, you know, we've got lads who are PTs, we've got lads who are landscape gardeners, stuff like that. So if they were to, I don't know, let's just say, for example, do their ACL on Saturday, they're going to be out of work. They're going to not be getting paid. They're self-employed. So what we do is we set up a policy for them, and they, I mean, pretty much simple as it is. Yeah, it pays them a lump sum of money tax free, and they can then use that for, I mean, you see it a lot now, people setting up GoFundMes for football injuries on a Saturday, and they're kind of asking people to all chip in to pay for a surgery, which might be $4,000 or $6,000 or something. So that is kind of my main market of players, because you get injured, you can't work. How do you then fund the surgery as well? How do you pay the bills if you're off work? You
know? I had it. So I played lower level non-league, nothing too crazy. And, you know, got a little bit of money from the team I was playing for. But when I got injured, that was it. And I didn't have any money for getting an MRI done. I just went through the NHS. And I had it where I went along to them, and they looked at it and said, you've got, you know, ligament damage, but your ACL's fine. Yeah. So they did everything. And I just kept saying that there's something seriously wrong here. You've helped with every other ligament, but there's something still majorly wrong with my knee. And so they put me on a waiting list to know, see specialists all the time. And then I got on a waiting list for an MRI, and it was about 18 months after I first did it, I got an MRI, and then they told me that everything looked fine.
Yeah.
And I was like, but there's still something wrong. So they eventually operated on me. 2 years after I'd done the injury, they did an operation. And the same guy that once told me that he thinks it's in my head and there's nothing wrong woke me up and said to me that I have no ACL. And the reason why they didn't spot it is because normally you would see that there'd be, you know, damage within the knee, because it happened such a long time ago.
Yeah.
They didn't spot there was no ACL there. And then about 6 months later, I had the operation to replace my ACL. It was just a complete mess. I had to quit playing football. Haven't played football again since. I had my own business at the time. Luckily, because I had my own business, it wasn't a manual intensive business, so I could still work. But imagine if you were a PT or a landscape gardener or something like that. Yeah. And so I wanted to get you on the podcast because I actually think this is actually really important. Not only, you know, for every level of football player, really, outside of, you know, like Premier League football players would probably be okay. I'd imagine you could probably tell me more about that. But it's one of those that it's, I think it's something that I wish I'd have had at the time.
Yeah, no, it's, I think the best thing about it, like in a time in the world where the cost of everything is, you know, through the roof, these policies are less than £20 a month. So you're looking at, you know, I always break it down, less than £5 a week. You know, people are happy to go out and buy a Starbucks every day, or they, you know, they get a takeaway twice a week. That's adding up to, you know, you get yourself a coffee every day. That's, you know, you're spending £20-25 a week. You can get these policies for less than that a month. And that for me is just, it is a no brainer. There is not one footballer that should be stepping on a pitch, I would say probably League Two and below, that shouldn't have one of these policies, because I think I've had 12 successful claims already since I started, like probably a year and a half ago, which just lads, different injuries. I mean, 5 or 6, I think, have been ACLs, ranging from just like my mate who, like I say, plays for the local pub team. We've had lads, a couple of lads in our team, goalie dislocated his shoulder. He had a £4,000 payout. And he's actually with a pro club, so he's still getting paid in full.
I know who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
getting that payout as well. So it's not free money, because it's not, but it probably could be classed as that for the pros, because like you say, they still get paid at the same time. I did it myself. I actually had one of these policies probably for 4 or 5 years now, and broke a little bone in my foot at Stevenage towards the end of the season, it was, I think, and I completely forgot I had it. But then I think I seen Matty put something up, so I thought, I've got one of them. So I rang him up. Probably within a week, I had like a £3,000 payout. I only missed, I think I missed 3 weeks of playing. But then on the other side, like I've had, you know, lads who were, like I say, that I get a lot of, you know, electricians, manual workers, you know, builders and stuff like that. And if they do their ACL on a Saturday, there's no way they can go to work for, you know, two, yep. 3 weeks. And I can cover them for the lump sum payout, and I can cover them for their income protection as well, which pays them a lump sum up to around about 70% of their monthly salary every month until they get back to work. So it's not just injury insurance. You know, I've done a lot of my family's life insurance and stuff like that. And I think one thing you notice when you get into it is just the amount that kind of people don't really know about it, which is why social media for me is probably the biggest tool. Like you say, you see that popping up and you think, hold on, what's that then? And that's kind of how we work, and especially how I work as a business. You know, it's getting it around and making people aware. And I'm at the minute just really pushing, trying to get it, because we actually have access to a provider that can provide injury cover for rugby players as well, which, you know, it shouldn't be available, but it is. And I've had probably 8 to 10 new rugby clients in the last couple of weeks, and I'm obviously really trying to push it in the women's game at the minute as well, because I think there's just an epidemic of ACLs in the women's game at the minute. And a lot of these girls, an example which how I, my old team Stevenage, I've seen that their captain, I think she broke her ankle, possibly it was one or the other of a knee injury or ankle, and she didn't have any cover. And obviously the club are trying to set up a GoFundMe to raise money for surgery. So I sort of spoke to a lot of people at the club, and eventually I got into, you know, the women's team, and just made them aware of what's available. You know, you like, it was similar to yours. I think she had to wait like 18 months for potential surgery on the NHS. She would have had a £6,000 payout and could have just paid for that surgery that week, and she'd probably be back on the pitch kind of,
oh, in, you know, hindsight,
at least a year quicker.
I didn't have the money at the time, but I would have found the money in hindsight, yeah, to just, yeah, get the MRI and get an operation done. I would have done, you know. And so if you've got the insurance to cover that,
you don't need to fork out any of your own money. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to say about what you do, etc.? How can people get in contact with you as well if they want to reach out to find out more?
Just Instagram, really. My profile. I do a lot of my kind of work on there. I think obviously social media is like the biggest tool in it to get out there at the minute. All my details are on my Instagram, which is Limesy14, I think. And then it's got all my email stuff on there. I've got a couple of videos on there which have like successful claim stories. But yeah, it's just, for me, it's just trying to make everyone aware of that it is available. And you just don't want to be that person that, you know, I get messages now, and it's lads who have got injured on the weekend, and they'll message me on Monday or Tuesday saying, I've done this on the weekend, is there anything you can do now? And it is too late then. There's nothing, yeah, I can do now. Whereas if you would have just, you know, sometimes I blame myself, but sometimes you don't know if have they seen what's available? Have I got enough information out there, or have they seen it and just thought, oh no, it's just another cost? And then, but then it comes to that, and they're probably sitting there thinking, I could have had, you know, £4,000-£6,000 payout for that, and I could have sorted my surgery. I wouldn't need to worry about the bills, the mortgage, the rent, whatever it is that you're not going to be able to do because you can't walk or can't work. So just, yeah, I mean, find me on social media. And this is good because obviously it's still quite an unknown to a lot of people. So it's just about, you know, spreading the word and just making people aware that what we do and what is out there and how little it costs just to protect yourself going on the pitch. And like I said earlier, it's something, especially the lower down you play, and there's, you know, some of the crazy tackles that go in and stuff like that. It's just, make sure you're covered, because it's going to save you kind of financially if something does happen to you.
100%. Now, I always like to end the podcast with a bit of fun. So have you got any stories that you can share with us during your career, or even, you know, random ones from now work, you know, semi-pro insurance days? Have you got anything funny you can share with us just to end the podcast?
I was thinking about this earlier, and I don't really know where to go with it.
I know there's a lot of stuff you won't be able to say to share. I know football world. Have you got any funny stories?
Always back in the day, it was, you know, a lot of the banter and the funny stories were a lot different 15 years ago than what they are now. But just had so much fun, you know, with the nights out with the boys and the holidays and stuff like that. There's probably too many to break one down and be able to go back to it now and remember it. It's probably going to be impossible.
Has things changed a lot during your career? Because, you know, the drinking culture, the going out. I'm even intrigued in, like, you know, non-leagues, playing step two, for example, in the National South. I mean, back in my day, everyone would go out on a heavy night out. Yeah. You know, will Bath City do that on a Saturday night, and would everyone have a hangover on a Sunday?
No, it has changed a lot. And I say this in quite a lot of my stuff I've done with podcasts and interviews. This, I think, sort of, maybe it's because, I don't know why it is. Maybe it's because everyone's got phones now and everyone just records anything and people are...
True, can't get up to it now.
Yeah, I mean, back when I was sort of between my 20s and 30s, we'd train on a Tuesday and then we'd have a Wednesday off. So Tuesday night would always be like a social of some sort. And then Saturday after the game, it would always be. But yeah, I can only speak for, obviously I get older, so I'm like kind of over all that now, but it's one of them where you don't generally see it as much. I mean, teams always have their Christmas do's, and that's like the big exciting bit of the year, and I've had some unbelievable Christmas do's over the years, but it's not as kind of popular, I don't think, as it was back then.
Do you know what? I feel, especially with younger players, not even players, I go to the gym now and everyone's just in the gym and they don't go out and drink. Yeah. It's the culture. Nightclubs are closing 24/7 because people aren't going out and just getting unbelievably drunk now. They're actually more worried because I think Love Island's changed everything. Everyone's now worried about their six pack more than going out and getting drunk.
Yeah, no, but that's kind of a good thing, isn't it? I mean,
it's a good thing, 100%.
It was an unhealthy culture, to be honest, but when you're playing football, you get away with it. But yeah, if you were doing that and you weren't kind of doing any exercise, it was, you're going on a slippery slope then, aren't you? But yeah, I think you're right. Obviously, it goes back to the whole social media, phones. Like, everyone wants to look good, don't they? And I've got two daughters, two stepdaughters, so it's like, I know what it's like. I've got girls all around me, and you know, they go to school, and a lot of it now is, you know, the phones and the appearance. And you're probably right. Yeah, I mean, they probably want to get up on Sunday and look great so they can go out and do some good selfies.
Exactly. Thanks, Chris. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And good luck with the rest of the season. And look forward to seeing what you're up to next year as well.
Top man. Thank you, bud.